Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. My name is Sam Otten from the University of Missouri, and my guest is Jen Lo, who's a professor of mathematics education in the Department of Mathematics at Western Michigan University. Jen, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
I'm very much looking forward to this conversation because I know your career has had some interesting twists and turns, and we're going to kind of follow quite a few of those through this conversation. But you have a background in mathematics and your work is in mathematics education. So I want to go back to that moment when you decided to get your doctoral degree and what inspired you to do that? And also, how did you transition from pure mathematics to math education? Tell us a little bit about the start of your academic journey there.
When I was in college in the mid-1980s, there were three main paths for a person who had an undergraduate degree in pure mathematics. First, continue to the graduate programs to become a college professor. Second, became a high school math teacher. Or third, enrolled in a programming certificate program and became a computer programmer. At that time, I didn't like the lifestyle offered by the second and third choice. So I decided to go on to the graduate school. Looking back, I now know how wrong I was about the academic position being a light and stress-free career. So I was fortunate enough to receive a TA-ship from the Department of Mathematics, Purdue University, upon receiving my master's degree in pure math at National Tsinghua University in Taiwan. The first activity all new math TAs attended at Purdue was a TA workshop where various speakers gave us overview and tips of becoming TAs. And Dr. Grayson Wheatley was one of the speakers. Different from the other speakers who gave us list of do's and don'ts, he talked about math learning as a sense-making activity and supported his ideas with examples of student work when making sense was or was not emphasized. His talk really hit me hard. As someone who had managed to earn respectable grades in all mathematics courses, while at the same time rarely experienced the aha moment of truly understand what I was doing, I made an appointment to see him right after the workshop. And after we talked for about an hour, I made the decision to switch from math major to an education major because the math doctoral program was housing at the College of Education. I also switched all my courses from pure math to education, except keeping the real analysis in order to keep my TA-ship at the math department. And a few months later, Dr. Wheatley approached me asking me if I would be willing to transfer to Florida State University with him, and I said yes. So my doctorate degree was from Florida State instead of Purdue. Actually, December 16 was the day Dr. Wheatley passed away. And so I'm a little bit emotional when I mention him and really try to recall this experience. He is the most influential person for my entire math education career.
Yeah, that's quite the turning point and quite the effect that he had on your career, you know, your direction that you were taking. And it's interesting, too, how you're talking about when you were doing the pure maths, you were successful, but you weren't having those aha moments. But it kind of seems like this was an aha moment about math learning and math teaching, and that was what you wanted to dedicate more time to.
Yeah. And the transition from pure math to math education was really hard initially. As a math major, I really didn't have to write much in essay forms, and my written English was not great. And I also lacked the foundational knowledge in education. So in addition to the mandatory math education research seminars and the research methodology courses, Dr. Wheatley advised me to take an undergraduate course in American education history and several graduate courses in educational psychology, philosophy, and the curriculum theory. He also encouraged me to write and revise all the time. And I can still remember his voice just say, Jen, just write, and just write. And there were days when I felt like quitting after translating every single word of a sentence into English, but still had no idea what that paragraph was talking about. And Dr. Wheatley spent endless hours answering my question and editing my writing. And I barely passed my first few education courses with B. And you know what B means in graduate schools. And things finally got better after a year.
So probably quite a bit of your writing that you had to do was on your dissertation. I wonder if you just might say quickly what the topic of your dissertation was.
Yes. The title of my dissertation was Student Participation and the Learning Opportunity in Grade 3 Mathematics Classes. And the data came from my work as a research assistant in the Purdue Project, directed by Drs. Paul Kopp, Erna Yeko, Terry Wood, and Dr. Grayson Wheatley. In that study, I tracked the participation and the learning opportunities of several third grade students over an entire school year when using the curriculum materials and the problem-centered learning instruction model developed by the Purdue Project. Mm-hmm.
So after your PhD, your career, like I alluded to earlier, you had kind of a winding path, a multifaceted path. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about the years after your PhD. And what were the ways that you kept your scholarship and your teaching and your passions for those parts of math education? How did you keep those things alive after your PhD?
Yeah, after I received my PhD in 1991, and I was offered an assistant professor position at Arizona State University West Campus in Phoenix. It was a great professional experience for me. The campus was still very new at that time. To support faculty scholarship, the library would find us any resources and send us the hard copies to our department mailbox, kind of like the interlibrary loan that is fairly common nowadays. But that was a rare service 30 years ago. In addition, I was able to apply for research funding from both the Tempe campus and the West campus to support my first research project after the dissertation. Nevertheless, I quit after 2 years and moved to Ithaca, New York, because I wanted to have kids at that time and did not want to do this with a long-distance marriage. So I was off the tenure track position for 9 years until Western Michigan University took a chance to offer me an assistant professor position in 2002. From the moment I made up my mind to resign the first tenure track position, I knew I had to find ways to maintain my scholarship and to continue developing my teaching expertise in order to return to a tenure track academic position. To maintain my scholarship, I did a lot of things. First, I participated actively in all the mathematics education related seminars led by Drs. Jared Comfrey and David Henderson at Cornell University. Then I was fortunately to be awarded a Spencer Postdoc Scholarship in 1995 to conduct another study to answer some of the questions that were not answered fully from my dissertation. And being a Spencer Postdoc Fellow provided me with lots of professional development opportunities, and also the chance to know Jin Fakai, who was also a Spencer postdoc. With him and another colleague, Ted Watanabe, who was a fellow graduate student from Florida State, I started a line of research on international comparative curriculum analysis. So I also made sure that I always have a visiting title with Cornell University, so that my vita would not look empty. Finally, I continue to work hard on presenting and publishing the results of my various studies. And I remember at that time, even though I was just a lecturer at SUNY Cortland, the university actually provide travel funding for the lecturer. So, and I think there are really a lot of opportunities out there, even though you're not holding a full-time tenure track position, and one just have to find those support and resources actively. And to expand my teaching experience, I look for all available part-time teaching position in a nearby university. So I mentioned that I was a lecturer at both the math and education department at SUNY Cortland for 1 year. I was a lecturer at the math department at Ithaca College for another year. And I also taught summer courses at Syracuse University for 1 summer. And finally, a 3-year instructorship opened up at Cornell University to take charge of pre-calculus course used by about 500 undergraduate students every year from the Cornell statutory colleges to satisfy their college level math requirement. And these various positions provide me with valuable experience to teach a variety of introductory math courses for non-STEM majors in both the large lecture and the small class setting. It was challenging to do all this while raising 2 young children, but it all paid off when I looked for a tenure track position again in 2002. So looking back, I consider myself fortunate to meet great colleagues who I could collaborate with and continue to grow even without a full-time tenure track position. And I thank every one of them.
Yeah, wow. I'm sure it's wild to think back to that era and all the things you were managing and balancing. And it's amazing that you were able to do that.
Thank you. Yes.
So I want to go forward a few years when you were back on the tenure track stream and you published some work. You had sort of research on pre-service teachers and their multiplication knowledge. You also had some research that was about fraction knowledge. So in these, you know, elementary important concepts of multiplication and also fractions, I wonder if you can just share what were some of the big ideas or the big questions that you were investigating at that time? And what were some of the things that you found that you feel like really kind of shaped your thinking about those topics?
Those papers were actually based on 2 different research projects. One was the investigation of the role of written justification in supporting pre-service teachers' development of various concepts and skills associated with whole number operations. This work was a collaboration with my colleague, Terry Grant at Weston, and also Judith Flower at the University of Michigan Dearborn. The other project was the work on the roots of the difficulties with refreshing concepts among pre-service teachers in the context of international comparative studies with Fengzhen Luo from Montana State University and Yuqing Liu at the National Taipei University of Education. The main findings that shaped my thinking and my work with pre-service teacher that I learned from these 2 projects were the need to make better connections between learning and teaching of concepts typically taught in the setting of geometry measurement and in the setting of number and operations. For example, linear area model, a linear and area models were used as the basis for addition and multiplications. And the unit conversions require a solid understanding of the concepts of multiplication and division. Central to both settings are the concepts of units and attributes. I truly believe that being able to understand the role of these 2 concepts played in various mathematical ideas is the key to meaningful mathematics learning. For example, when determining the quantity made up of 1 apple and 1 orange, one will have to switch it to the unit of fruits, okay? And to answer the question, how big is the puddle? One has to pick an appropriate attribute as the focus of the measuring activity.
Yeah, I think that's interesting to think about. I've taught in the elementary pre-service teacher courses a little bit. It's not my main area, but the way that you're talking about units and attributes and really putting meaning to the mathematical operations, you know, instead of we're going to do this with fractions, we're going to do this with numbers, instead saying like, no, we're going to think about it in a way that makes sense. To me, it reminds me of your breakthrough moment earlier when you were like realizing, oh, math teaching and learning can be rooted in sense making. and it can all actually make sense how it all fits together. It seems like you've carried that forward to working with pre-service teachers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So now I want to kind of go to the present day, and you've had this, you know, wealth of experiences, and you've seen math education from a lot of different angles. I wonder if you have some thoughts about main challenges that we're facing as a field, and if you have any advice for us about how to think about or how to approach some of the challenges.
In my first graduate math education seminar in 1987, Dr. Ed Lubinsky assigned three papers on the place value and the whole number additions and subtractions. One was done by Dr. Tom Carpenter. The other was done by Dr. Arthur Broody. And the last one was by Dr. Lauren Risnick. And 34 years later, these two topics, so place value and whole number addition and subtraction, were still about the only ones that the field of mathematics education research had some kind of consensus on. And I think our field has a lot of talent and a lot of long-term projects, but few of these projects are connected or built from each other. I think we need more coordinated effort to solve some big problems from multiple fronts with multiple approaches. I also think that as a field, we need more good translators who can communicate very abstract research findings to elementary school, or actually school teachers at all level, just like a CGI projects and the Mass Recovery Council have done for the field.
Yeah, I definitely think about that a lot. There's conversations globally about science communication and how to take scientific ideas and use good messaging and lots of media and effective ways of reaching the general public. But on a microcosm, we need that sort of for math education ideas as well, to be able to communicate to parents and school boards and administrators or whoever it might be, and the kids themselves in school. What are we doing? Why are we doing it in math education?
This might be something the Math App podcast can take on, you know, in the future.
Have some offshoots that are bite-sized that can be TikTok length or something.
Yes, definitely. Yes.
Well, it's been great talking to you about your career and some of your ideas. I want to also ask this question that I ask a lot of my guests about what if you had not, you know, you had this moment where things changed and you headed into math education and that's led to these decades of work. I wonder, though, what you might have done if you were not in math education and you were not in mathematics either. What if you had to do something completely different? What might you think of?
The alternative career. Okay. If I have to think outside the box, I probably would like to be a handy woman. This could have something to do with my worry about all the house projects I need to do with an old house. I also like the idea of being able to work with my hands and be able to go home and not think much about the job.
So you feel like you could go to a site somewhere, do some things, and be able to come home and relax?
Yes, I think my only complaint about my academic career and the nature of our job, it's just something with me all the time. I mean, it's like it doesn't stop at night, it doesn't stop at the weekends. Well, I guess it could stop, but you just have to kind of remind yourself you have to stop. Otherwise, you'll be just thinking about the teaching and thinking about the research all the time.
Yeah. I also feel like with some, you know, handy projects, some house projects, it also seems like you can identify a problem and solve it within a reasonable amount of time. You know, like a couple of days later, you can be like, that is fixed or that is done. And I feel like in academia, the problems that we're dealing with are never done. It's just like decades long efforts. Like you said, we've been working on things for decades. We need to try to coordinate better. So I kind of would like the idea of having a task and then it's finished and you can sort of feel like you've completed it.
That's definitely true.
All right. Well, my guest is Jin-Jen Lo from Western Michigan University, and it's been great talking to you. Thanks so much and have a good break.
Thank you very much.